pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106 if you'd like to respond to anything we are discussing this morning. So come on the program. State Representative Randall Shedd, that's in about 30 minutes. Got an op-ed out a lot of different places this morning, but on rural broadband, we'll get into a discussion about that right now. It's time for our next guest. Very pleased to bring on show regular, all-around good guy, former State Senator Dick Brubaker to the program. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Let's get right into it here. We always talk about the ever-present U.S. Senate race in Alabama, and that seems to be where the discussion is. But, I mean, it's a race, but, you know, the idea that we're going to take it easy during the holidays, one campaign isn't, and I think it's really starting to show, unfortunately.
Well, I think I got an email from the Brooks campaign. That was the most negative hit piece I've seen yet. And it starts off with Katie Britt's out fundraising this 3-1, and then it goes into this long list of what a terrible person she is. And if the polls weren't closing, if their own polls didn't show her really gaining ground, I don't see them releasing something like that.
No, I tell you, you feel it on the ground. And I was at the Iron Bowl on Saturday. And before the game, you know how it is. You have the candidates walking around. But saw both Mo Brooks and Katie Britt. And Katie Britt, you didn't used to see this. I'm sure you've been to the social functions and any of that. But
and
now,
avoid the one they think they're going to lose.
Now, when she shows up, people go
come to her.
Yeah, they go to her. They try to get their picture made with her or a selfie.
You see that picture of her and Coach Tuberville, Senator Tuberville?
Well, I was just about to get to that. But you feel when you see that kind of thing on the ground. We saw this a lot with Tommy Tuberville in that race, where people would just show up to get his autograph or their picture made with him, and then they wouldn't even stick around for the event. A lot of that during the 2020 cycle, but I think this billboard stuff and the things she's doing is starting to pay dividends for her.
Well, I think it is too, and I think that I still believe in my gut that it's still Mo Brooks' race to lose. I still think he's got an edge, but I do think he needs to get on message that about what voters care about. Other than going negative on Miss Britt, he needs to talk about things that Alabamians care about and talk about them in a more specific way. Because let's face it, most of his campaigning lately, at least what I've seen, I may be wrong, has either been tying himself more closely to President Trump, or it's been go negative on his opponent. And I think people want to see, you know, tell us all the great things you did as a House member and tell us what the great things you're going to do as a senator. But, you know, let's be a little more. Because I will say, as far on the policy side, Britt has been gotten into specifics a little more than he has. And frankly, like you said, I just think she's running a more effective messaging program than he is.
Well, you know, Congressman Brooks has kind of forgotten what brought him to the dance in the first place. Like, it wasn't going negative against your opponent because his opponents were always just kind of, you know, they would get beat by 50 points. And it really wasn't embracing Donald Trump. I mean, like, he's got to go out there, be himself a little more. And, you know, the thing is, Senator, it's interesting to me that the popularity of Donald Trump, some of that was just cult of personality stuff, I get it. But a lot of it was also this sort of populism. It wasn't necessarily ideological, that it was more like, you know, just kind of pragmatic or whatever seemed right at the time. Not a lot of that being discussed right now.
No, you're dead on there. And, you know, Mo has got the story to tell. And when he was the first couple of races he ran, you know, in Huntsville and later for Congress, you know, he did a good job telling his own story, which is a good one. He needs to go back to telling it and quit talking about the other two people being President Trump and Katie Britt. I think if he does that, people will remember why they liked him in the first place. But if he doesn't do it, you know, let's face it, Katie Britt has run a good campaign. She's got a lot to offer. She's got Shelby's organization, and most Alabamians think Shelby is a pretty great guy. I certainly do. You know, she's got a story to tell, too, and she's just doing a better job of communicating it.
Yeah, and I think you're right about that. There's this old school sort of conventional wisdom that you take it easy, you save your resources, and you don't go into it until you don't really start using up your shots until the first of the year. That appears to me to be what's going on with Congressman Brooks. It's not working, is it?
No, it's not working. And if he gets, and part of his problem is he set himself up. He ran on his, nobody did this to him. He ran as the heir apparent, as the incumbent almost. That was the heir he tried to give his campaign. And now this whole outsider thing is working against it. And he, you know, if he gets into a runoff, there's no way he survives it. He's got to win this thing on the first go. And if I know he's got a good campaign chest, I think he needs to start using it, but use it to tell his story, not talk about other people. Because Alabamians have elected Mo Brooks a lot of times. There are things they like about it. He just needs to remind them what those things are.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. The thing is here, I brought this up with a couple of our other guests, it's like a football game, right? And Katie Britt was the underdog. She should have, it shouldn't be close. Carson Brooks has everything going for him. He had the Trump endorsement. He had like a 45 point lead or something, if you believe the polls. And he was the favorite, but then you get to halftime and the game is close, but you have these people that would have supported her, you know, no matter what, but just kind of reluctantly did so, knowing it was probably a lost cause, now think they got a winning shot, and they're more willing to open up their checkbook and be more engaged in the race. That's what it feels like is going on to me.
Well, the email I got from Mo's campaign said she was out fundraising them 3-1. Now, if that's true, that's if I was the Brooks' campaign manager, I would find that very concerning.
Well, I think it's probably more than that. I bet it's like 10-1 or something. You know, Shelby given $5 million, but now that's to give it to a pro Katie Britt PAC. But there's no reason to think that Mo Brooks is going to be a big fundraiser.
Well, he's going to have to find some money somewhere, because he can't just continue to drift like this. Not if he wants to be a senator.
No, I think you're right about that, Senator. I think you were talking about this morning. And I just think it's inevitable. I think the feds are going to take over Alabama's prison system. That special session that happened earlier this year.
Say that again.
I think the feds are going to take over the Department of Corrections.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That special session earlier this year for new prison construction, I thought maybe could put the brakes on the Department of Justice, and they would be willing to give Alabama a chance to put a lot of these enact some of these measures. But the problem is that you're finding these problems within the walls of these prisons, particularly. I think it's the prison guards and the administration of the prisons. I mean, you have lockdown because of COVID, yet you're still having drug overdoses inside the walls of these prisons. That's not getting rectified. Nothing's being done to fix that. And the DOJ is just saying, you know what, we're amending our complaint and we're doubling down. This just to me looks like it's an inevitability.
Well, let's face it. You know, Alabama has had lots of time to try to do better. And deep down, the feds don't want to take over a state correction system. That's one reason Alabama's been given all these, you know, numerous chances to do something. But between the problems on the parole board and the legislature's inability to come to some sort of substantive solution, You know, I'm almost to the point where I think some people, some insiders may want to see the feds come in and fix this because, you know, with all these horrible stories about parolees, you know, getting out of jail and killing people like this thing in, what's the name of that town where he drove the van through the band?
Up in Waukesha.
Waukesha. And, you know, and even in Montgomery, I had one of my employees killed by a person who had had bonded out on a violent crime, on a very low bond, and ended up shooting a guy that works for me. No politician wants to be seen as promoting releasing dangerous people into their districts, no matter what district they represent. And that includes Democrats. Let's face it, the Democrats ran the legislature for a long time, and the prisons were overcrowded then. You didn't see them, when they were in charge, advocating mass release of parolees.
Right.
Because it doesn't work any better in a Democrat district than it does in a Republican.
Well, we want a very solid, strong law enforcement, criminal justice system. But it's going to cost. It's going to cost a lot of money. It's going to cost. This prison plan doesn't have near enough bed space. You still got overcrowding. You still got to meet the standards set forth by the federal government and figure out what's in the parameters of the Eighth Amendment. That it's going to be expensive.
You've got to pay people who work in the system a decent wage.
What is that? What is the right? Because I think it's not even going to be a decent wage. It's a job nobody wants. So you're gonna have to pay a lot. No, and then unless you come at me with like six figures, I think that nobody's going to take that job that's qualified, that could pass a drug test, that is going to be a quality employee. You're going to have to pay a lot to get people to take that job, and that's something that the state maybe not be willing to. That's going to be a very, very tough thing the state's going to have to deal with.
And that's, you know, all, you know, everything we've mentioned are problems that have been around. It was certainly there when I was in the legislature, and the legislatures I sat in never could come up with an agreement, at least not one that reached very far. But I'm going to tell you this, we're going to have to do a better job drawing a line between what's a dangerous prisoner and what is someone that we can afford to use other options on. People that aren't immediate threats, you know, we may have to stop incarcerating and start going to house arrest or some other solution because, you know, when the feds take it over, you're going to see new parole boards impaneled and a lot of people get out that Alabamians may not be real happy about being released on the streets.
I mean, isn't that the rub, though, that the Alabamians want bad people locked away, put away, it's not so much just having police on the beat, it's not so much just having tough prosecutors, but you want these people locked up, and the hard decision, the hard discussion is going to be made. You're going to have to spend some more money and put more resources toward this.
Well, and that's always been the catch-22 that nobody's been able to get their arms around. And you know, if you look at it statistically, you know, people past 65 years old are very unlikely to commit another violent crime. I mean, but the way our laws are written, you know, with the Habitual Offender Act, the way it's written, even if everybody agrees we can let a person out of jail, there's almost no way to get them out. And the legislature's going to have to further reform that law and give the Department of Corrections some flexibility that they don't currently have.
Well,
it's not going to be popular, but that's what they're going to have to do.
I think you're right. Well, in the interim, I just think it's an inevitability that the feds are going to come in and they're going to clean house here. Maybe that's the – I don't know of another solution because there's just not the legislative will to do so right now.
No, and that's a great way to put it, on either side of the aisle.
Now, Democrats want to make it about sentencing and criminal justice reform. Republicans, they made it about construction, and I think that's a positive step, but inevitable that is just not going to be enough, and the feds are going to take over.
Well, and, you know, let's face it. I mean, the Democrats, they don't really want to see a bunch of violent offenders
turned loose in their districts either. That's why they talk about it incessantly, but they never want to actually enact it.
Yeah, I think it's a good political talking point for them for whatever reason. Hey, Senator, we got to get out of here. Thanks for making time for us.
Thanks for taking the call. I enjoyed it.
State Senator, our former State Senator, Dick Brubaker, on the line there. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Because South's going to do it again.